Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hour number two, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Monday. This is what I know. Coming up in about 45 minutes or less, we'll have a $25 gift card to Party Foul if you just tell us what you know. And a lot of you are working from home during these times. We know that. You can stream us from anywhere. You can download the Game Natural app. That's one way to do it. Enable Alexa Skill or Google Home and ask it to play 102.5 The Game. That's certainly another one. Or you can live stream from our website, which is thegamenashville.com. So I guess we were going to have Sean Salisbury on, and now I guess he's got to move. So
yeah, we're working to move him. Apparently his agent double booked him.
His agent. So you go through his agent to get
him? No, I go through him, but
that's what I thought.
Yeah, I guess there's an agent.
So bigger name on line one is what you're telling us.
Sounds like it, which that happens, I understand, but I wish it wouldn't happen, now, but
right.
Here we are.
Okay. All right, so we will not have Sean Salisbury this hour. All right, who got a chance? We brought it up with Teron, but what were your guys' take on episodes 7 and 8 of The Last Dance?
Really good. I was very curious to see how they would portray the minor league baseball part, and it was great insight that we had by our guest that we had on Friday, who I thought was outstanding. Terry Francona, I'm not surprised. I was very complimentary. I think the best thing that I thought out of that part of it, and it certainly wasn't the only aspect of it. It was really well done. I was enthralled like I always am, from start to finish of the two episodes. But the professionalism, the respect that Michael Jordan showed his minor league baseball teammates, that was impressive to me, that he appreciated the process, was one of the guys. He knew how good they were. He knew how much they had dedicated to the game. And that was cool to me to see that. And that was echoed by I'm forgetting his name.
Kurt Bloom.
Yeah. I knew I shouldn't have said it wrong. But that was part of it. I do, however, wonder, when I heard Jerry Reinsdorf say, I think Michael Jordan would have eventually made it to the majors. And I do, this is the other part that is a great what if. Is if baseball had not gone on strike, would he have played another season? Would he at least have started another season? The whole complexity of the strike was still lingering and everything was in court and they brought in the replacement players. That was an easy way for Michael Jordan to step out of there, right? And once he stepped out, I think that's where his mind started going back to basketball. The lure started happening right at the same time. I guess we'll never know if they had had it resolved.
Baseball for that. Yeah. Thank baseball.
That's what I'm saying. If they had never stepped away, I wonder if he would have given it one more season. I would have really loved to see how much he improved. Because on one hand, as you heard Terry Francona say and Jerry Reinsdorf say, there was a lot of room for improvement. He got better. He was working really hard to improve at baseball. But the bottom line is when you hit 202 with very little power at Double A, and you're 31, you have to improve an extremely rapid rate to really be a major leaguer. Now, Jerry Reinsdorf could have made one phone call and said, I want him on the White Sox. And whether he deserved to be there or not, they could have put him there.
Yeah,
just
he was
like the Mets.
Paying him like $3 million a
year. Right, exactly. Like just with the Mets with Tim Tebow, right? They could have promoted him, whether he really deserved it or not. But the numbers really did not equate to that. Even though I think it was a tremendous accomplishment to even hit 202 at Double A when you haven't played in 15 years or whatever it was from the time that he stopped playing in high school to when he went in there, that would have been a heck of a debate to see, or a heck of a theater, I think, just to see if he could have improved to the point where it was worthy of him getting called up to the major leagues. And we might have seen it in Nashville, right, playing for the Sounds.
Well, I think we would have. I respect, though, the fact that, and he said it in the last dance, that he didn't want to be a replacement player, that he wasn't going to do that. And
right, and really and every player had to make that decision.
Yeah, and he very well could have. I mean, he could have tried to go down that path, and but some might have viewed it as the, you know, the easy path, and the way that he's been portrayed in this, that's not him. That's not him at all. I mean, that's not the competitor that he is. So I respect him for making that decision, and who knows what it would have looked like. I mean, think about this. I heard this on Golic and Wingo, and you know, they actually brought it up. If he had stayed in baseball and had never come back, I mean, who knows what his baseball career would have looked like, but he would have had the same number of championships as LeBron. Kobe would have had two more. It just, it could have changed the history of basketball and how we view him. But as we know.
Well, not could have, it would have.
Would have, I mean, yeah, would have.
He is held, six is, you know, because it's nobody else, so he's held in that regard, being 6-0 in NBA Finals, and so I think that's why he gets that tag if he has three. If there's not a part two, I find it hard to believe that we would still hold him in the same regards that we do today. I could be wrong, but I doubt it.
I think we would still look at him as, you know, one of the best players.
Of course.
But would we look at him as the GOAT? I think that's the big question, you know, or would he just be in a group of the Kobe's and LeBron's, or would we hold Kobe in a higher regard than we do Michael? And I think that's a fair question.
There are very few people that are able to walk away and still have left more in the tank, and still have more left in the tank, and still get the recognition of being up there with the greats of all time. I mean, Barry Sanders and Jim Brown are probably the best examples I can come up with that left with more in the tank and still are held in the highest regards, right? Still held as
I think
in
the Jim Brown one is exactly the one.
You know Jim Brown could have had way more in the tank, and he still gets talked about as the greatest running back of all time.
Yeah, I think Jim Brown is the most apt comparison because we're talking about 9 years and to go do something else. In Jim Brown's case, it was to go to make movies or whatever, but I think that's what would have been the debate. Jim Brown was number one, right, in the NFL 100 years top 100. He was number one despite leaving after 9 years. So that would have been a really interesting debate because there would have been some worthy people right there with Michael Jordan if he had walked away there. What did you guys think of this? How he was portrayed, Michael Jordan, of almost, not almost, in some cases making up stuff to motivate him, to drive him into that assassin's mentality where Michael Jordan was at his best. You know, the LeBradford Smith story,
Of
those. That was really compelling, right? He would just find something in his mind to get him. And Buzz Peterson was talking about that with us last week. These two episodes, I think, brought that out even more so than any of the others.
Well, I think these were the two episodes that, because Michael had said before this even came out, that there are going to be people that don't like how I'm portrayed because they look at me differently. I mean, this is how it was, though. You know, I wasn't always a nice guy. And I think we saw that really in these two episodes. We've seen it throughout, but it was really highlighted here. And yeah, I was laughing at that because I'm sitting there going, well, don't ever tell Michael, hey, good game. And then said, yeah, I made it up. Like it wasn't true, but it got me motivated and I went lights out. So, hey, whatever works. I don't have a problem with it. I mean, that's what separates him from the rest and makes him the greatest of all time. I mean, in my opinion.
Well, I went somewhere when you asked that question, Willie, I went somewhere where nobody else went just because that's how I think. I laughed because of how many times people over the years have tried to tell me, you know, bulletin board material is hooey fooey and it's just all, you know, players and coaches, they don't need stuff to use. They don't use stuff as motivation. Like if I've had a dollar for every coach, player, or person that's tried to tell me over the years that they don't, you know, bulletin board material is just a bunch of garbage talk and nobody needs that. They're professionals, they're athletes, they're self-motivated, they know what they need to. it's all baloney. And I've always laughed at it. I've never given into that notion because it's crap. It's always been crap. Any coach that tells you they don't listen to stuff, it's crap. Players, too, they do. And you know what? A lot of them do use it as motivation. And Michael Jordan is no different than a long, long line of coaches and players that have used stuff that is said during the course of a week or leading
or
up
not
to
said.
A match or not said and used that as huge motivation for them. I mean, it's just garbage when people try to act like, coaches and players try to act like that doesn't happen. It absolutely does happen. What is the first thing Taylor Lewan said after a game? When was it? I don't remember when it was here. Was it last year, the year before? And he immediately barked at the media for saying, and who said what? He was basically, he was just saying, I've been hearing and reading everything you've been saying all week. What do you think about that? I think maybe it was after the Patriots. I don't remember what game it was. It just goes to show you, they absolutely use it, and that's okay. I think what's always bothered me is they always pretend like they don't. It's okay to, whatever motivates you is fine. I've never had an issue with that. But it's just this whole, you know, notion that, oh, please, you know, that bulletin board material, give me a break. Nobody does. Nobody cares about that stuff. They all know what's at hand. It's baloney. They absolutely do, and that's fine. I would hope that all of us, that there's things that motivate us, right? We use something to gear us. So I'm not surprised that Michael Jordan did that. I mean, think about the George Karl thing. George Karl by him in a restaurant, and Michael Jordan, you know, and I'm by the way, while I'm on that, I'll admit something. Last night, do you know that I totally forgot about the Bull? I don't know what that says. I need to go back and remember the time in my life, what was going on. I don't even remember the Bulls-Sonics championship series. I really don't. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, they played the Supersonics. Like, I don't know if it wasn't memorable. I don't know if I had something, you know, crazy going on in my life. No, I remember, believe me, Sean Kemp, man. I remember Sean Kemp really well. I remember that team. I don't know why I don't remember that Supersonics team. I don't remember that championship. I have remembered all of them and specific things about all the runs of the Bulls. And honestly, I had totally forgotten about the Supersonics. I don't know what that says, but do you remember that series?
Sure.
I'm not the right person to ask that.
Yeah.
George and I went to Chicago to see Wrigley Field. We went to a weekend series at Wrigley, and we tried to get into game two. And believe me, in 1996, I did not have the fundage to get into to game two. George thought he had enough to cover it, and George can tell you the story. I think the best offer that we could even get, and there were very few people even selling tickets, was like $900 per seat in the very, very top.
Look,
and we're like, we'll be watching in the sports bar.
George has the fundage. He doesn't have the stomach to pay that. And if he's listening, he knows I'm right. He didn't have the stomach to pay that price. And that's okay.
Well, 1996, I think that was before.
Well, that's true.
The
show really
flourished.
That's a good point.
To the point where he could have thought about that, but he was certainly ahead of me at that time. But
if you remember, George used to have a fund that he always talked about, Willie, a lot.
I've heard about this fund.
Some kind of slush fund.
Kind of, yeah, but it had a different name.
I don't think those were the words.
Yeah, I don't think it was called a slush fund, but yeah.
Right. But
so
we were actually
in
Chicago for one of the
bucks.
Games. That's what I remember. Yeah, yeah. And George can tell you. So we ended up walking for a while before we settled into a place to watch the game. But we were watching in a sports bar. But I remember that it was a, you know, I thought the Sonics were worthy. You know, they were. I thought they kind of underplayed how good the Sonics were going into that series. Sean Kemp was coming on as a superstar. Gary Payton was a great player. They never even mentioned Detlef Schrempf, who was awfully good. I felt like that was pretty competitive, but you know, they lost game three at home, and then they held serve in games four and five, you know, in that 2-3-2 setting, which I think really changes everything. You know, you go two 2-1-1-1 in all of the series leading up to the finals. And in the NBA several years ago, they decided to make, and it was right in the Jordan era, they decided to go 2-3-2,
yep.
Which I think changes the dynamic of a series.
So am I reading this right? We do have Sean on the other side?
Yep, he's ready to go.
Okay, all right, we'll come back. Sean Salisbury on the other side, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Guys, the wife and kid are out of the house, so I've opened up the door to the bonus room, so the German Shepherds are roaming. So if you hear something loud, you know, hear some barking, that's probably coming from my place. We'll see what happens. I may have to shoo them out of here. Let's go down to Houston. Let's bring in our friend Sean Salisbury, who's on the line with us. Sean, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I hope you guys and the fans in the great state of Tennessee are doing well, too, and safe. And looking forward to sports like everybody else and getting out a little bit and getting some vitamin D. But got to do what we got to do and making something happen, man. You guys know that. So I'm hanging in there. Thank you.
Right back at you. I want to get your quick thoughts on The Last Dance. What have you thought as an athlete watching – you know, just the story of Michael Jordan and the Bulls dynasty. What have you thought through 8 episodes?
Well, one is I would caution any other players at any level when you're watching this to think, because Josh McDaniels tried to be Belichick and it didn't work real well as a head coach, that you got to be you, that Michael Jordan's unique style. Now, there may be some like him. First off, I'll tell you this. We will never, in our lifetime, in your lifetime, any of us sitting in this conversation, you will never see, you know how they say, oh, he's the next Michael Jordan. You're not seeing that. In our lifetime, you will not see him again. And when I say that, is there guys talented? LeBron's gifted and talented. We got a lot of talented players in all sports. But when you combine talent with when you're the most talented, you work the hardest, and you've got an attitude that actually gets satisfaction out of carving your heart out, feeding it to you on a platter, and smirking at you while you're dying in front of him, and I don't mean literally in a sports term I'm talking about, unbelievable. And I'm fascinated with the guys. All this stuff that we thought, you know, that we all knew about Michael and, hey, winning 6 championships and what a great player and what, you know, he loves to bet on himself and how competitive he was. But it doesn't even touch the surface with it's not popular to be a leader. I guess what I take away from this is I love him more than I thought I did. Charlie, and I don't mean to name drop. Charles Barkley's a very dear friend of mine, and we've talked about Michael in years past about what a competitor, just all the stuff, not dirt. I'm talking about good stuff. And I thought, man. And, you know, Charles, all the years he's known him. And so you go into this with your expectations, and it exceeded him because now I know he's got editing power and all that. But, man, guys, think about that. It's not popular to be a leader. Man, great leaders, most of them, aren't liked very well at times because you can't be because half the room doesn't like you because you got to grab a guy by the nape of the neck, not literally. You got to get in a guy's face. Then you got to put your arm around one. You got to challenge another. You got to understand people. And there's a difference. I always believe that you manage tasks and you lead people. And it may be an unconventional way because not a lot of guys, because Jordan, everything he did, he asked you to do, he'd done it and beat you in sprints, beat you in the film room, beat you and smoking a cigar, be whatever it is. So I'm just fascinated with the level of sniper mentality that he had. We knew he had it, but you talk about aim small, miss small that the sniper has. This dude would find your weakness or take your strength and turn it into a weakness mentally, physically, emotionally, to the point where you were like, I don't want any more of this. I'm done. And I'm just fascinated by when you get the best of all of them and you put it into one dude, there's a reason why he is the best basketball player ever. And no disrespect to LeBron James. LeBron's the most physical specimen on the court I've ever seen. He'll never be Michael because there's a difference. LeBron wants to win and works hard and does it all. Michael Jordan's refusal to lose at any expense will never be we will not see it in our lifetime that it will ever be redone. We just won't.
Who did you play with that came the closest to being wired differently than anybody else you ever played with? How would you answer
that? That is a great question. I'll be honest with you, man, and I think every team, and when we say wired, and I know what you meant is how none of them are – I've never played with a guy Jordan-esque-wise when it comes to that. But I think about – I mean, I wasn't one of them, but I sure as hell played with the Warren Moons and the – I've been on a team – you know, Marcus Allen won the Heisman my freshman year. I've been on a team with Eric Dickers. That's Chris Carter. I start to look around at all the great players, me not being one of them, but Steve Largent taking something from us. Largent was close, but Steve never cussed. Steve never swore, never did that. But I'll tell you a real quick story. I'm sitting in the locker room in my rookie year in Seattle, and I'd follow him and David Craig and Kenny Easley around like a baby duck following a mother duck. We're sitting in there before practice, and this is during training camp. And on our complex then in Seattle in Kirkland, Washington, you could look out the glass through the locker room, through to the weight room, all the way out to the practice field. And I'm sitting next to a wide receiver who was a rookie trying to make the team, another wide receiver and a running back and myself, all of us rookies. We look out through the complex, and about a half hour before practice, there's a guy in full uniform running the route tree, with nobody else out there throwing him football. It was Steve Largent. Well, later that, and I'm thinking, this is ironic. Us rookies are trying to make a team sitting in here, and I'm sitting next to a receiver. And at that point in time, he that year became, in 1986, the greatest single receiver of all time, catches-wise, is out there working. So he had that mentality of, here's how we do it. They don't catch 100 balls after. Marcus Allen came close because he would, every time he touched the ball, run 60 yards on every time, jog back, and John Robinson put him back in the huddle. John Randall in Minnesota. Every team I've been on has had a guy, when we were successful, that was different. And I think great teams need them, whether it's a whack job, whether it's a Dennis Rodman approach. I mean, we all have them. The guy who wants to fight you every time you look at him different, the guy who is first to the meeting room, and then the guy who kind of has it all. So I played on every good team I played on. There was at least one dude that didn't – he was E.F. Hutton. He didn't have to say much, but when he did, everybody listened. And then there was the same guy who led a different way, but as close – I can name a guy from every team who had some sort of characteristic of Jordan that would not accept you being last running, would not accept you making the excuse that, well, I just wasn't feeling well, would not accept the, well, oh, I'm tired after sprints. It just – that guy, and then you look at him, and then you all look at their careers – and most 90% of them's careers ended up long, successful, and many of them with mustard-colored jackets on in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. There is no mystery. Junior Seau, another one, he practiced like you were trying to steal his family's food and money. Even on shorts and T-shirt, rookies, he would wear their ass out until they learned. Rodney Harrison, he would knock you. You come across the middle, Rodney Harrison had to be stopped by coaches at times because he was going full speed. It didn't matter. And he was willing to fight. Gee, you want to fight me for hitting it? Let's go. Yet everybody loved him. You may not have liked everything they did, but the respect factor. And it's more important for Jordan, and this is one thing I've realized, that the great ones want to be respected. They don't give a fuzzy rat's ass about being liked. And if you can be liked along the way, fine. But Belichick, Parcells, think about them all. Go through the list. How many of Tom Brady? Tom, I mean, how many of them are more, they want to win so bad that you better respect them? Liking them, eventually when the career's over, maybe you will, maybe you won't. It's the respect factor, and all the great ones I've been around are respected first and liked second. Like my dad. My dad was always my dad first and my friend second. It was never the opposite. And I think the great players all have that.
Wow, well said. Sean Salisbury on the line with us. If there's one thing that's come out of 2 months of doing shows from our homes is we've had some really – really good and candid interviews with, you know, a lot of players, you know, Eddie George and Mookie Betts and David Price, Ryan Leaf came on and told his journey. So I'm going to ask you, because we've always enjoyed our conversations with you, and this is kind of the path we went down with Ryan Leaf, and he was very open and honest on why it didn't work out. You're a competitor. You want to be is with all the greats. What was the one thing, Sean, that you felt like was the missing ingredient for your career to be different than what it was?
Are we talking about as a football player?
Yes.
As a football player, yeah. And I can, and part of this, and I've seen both ends, and I appreciate the question, and I think you guys know transparent. that I've been – I know what rock bottom looks like, so there's nothing you can ask me that would ever offend me, and I'm grateful for this question. I was the number one recruited athlete in the country. I was a high school All-American in basketball, would have been drafted in baseball. And I don't say this arrogant. It just will help the story. And
sure.
Was the number one football player and the number one quarterback in America when I came out of high school. And I can remember John Robinson coming into my living room about a week before signing date. He looked at me, and he said to me, he goes, "We want you here. You're our number one choice of any recruit, blah, blah, blah." And he said, but he said this, and I distinctly remember he said, "But I'm going to tell you this." And he has his national championship ring from 78 on his finger. And he said, this was his final home visit before I signed. Before we held hats at press conferences, he said, my dad wouldn't have let me anyway. He said, we're going to put you in an environment to be successful, but whether you come to USC or not, we are still going to show up on Saturday and we are still going to win. And he left my house. And my dad said, you want to be a part of that. So that I had that drive in me. I shredded my knee twice at USC. And so I went in and I played my entire NFL career with an anterior cruciate ligament. So that physically didn't allow me to do a few of the things I wanted, but it really comes down to this. It wasn't because a lot of guys overcome knee injuries. Hell, a lot worse than that. I mean, look at Alex Smith, what he's coming through. So excuses are for losers, and I'm not going to make that. I wish I'd have been fully healthy, as we all do. For me, it came down to this. Somewhere along the line, maybe after I've shredded my knee twice and didn't get drafted when I was, according to Mel Kiper, going to be a first-round pick after my sophomore year, and you start to buy into that hype and believe those things, and Mel's good, but you say, okay, that's me. After I shredded my knee twice and get drafted, I lost some confidence, thinking, well, man, everybody else doesn't believe in me. What about me? And my dad said, get your butt back in there, go make a team, and you'll play. And I played 10 years. But the thing why I didn't have, I think, more success is I had trouble, and I train quarterbacks every day. Is it something hit me along the way in my career? Because in high school, I never cared. I'd throw an interception, boom, I'll come back and get you the next time. There was a handful of years in my career in the NFL, I didn't get over bad plays quick enough. I just didn't. I throw an incompletion that I should have had a completion, and the rearview mirror was bigger than the windshield for me. And I let it fester, which caused me to make two or three more bad plays. And then you'd get into it and go. But to sustain the greatness that those great ones have, even after being the number one recruit, I used to be able to do something along the line. It hit me, and I did not get over bad plays fast enough. And I tell quarterbacks now, and I'll let you, and I know you guys got to go, is that you need to get over good plays and bad plays equally quick. And had I known that lesson for me, like had I had the same mentality in high school as I did in the NFL or when I showed up on USC's campus, injuries or not, I would have been a great player. But because, and I don't mean that I would have been, but I mentally beat myself up so bad that I didn't get over bad plays quick enough, and it cost me sustaining, and that's why other guys beat me out and should have when I was a backup. And the times I started for a few games and then, oh, have a bad game, and you let it fester. That was my biggest issue. I couldn't get over it quick enough.
Boy, the mental side of the game is so fascinating to study. Sean Salisbury is with us, and he is with Sports Talk 790 down in Houston. So, Sean, we've talked to you from time to time about the status of the Houston Texans. How do you feel about things? Have they improved themselves? Did you like what they did at the draft?
I did. I thought that's – listen, Bill O'Brien gets hammered, and rightfully so for a lot of reasons. Too much power. It's hard. I haven't talked to a former NFL coach or an NFL front office guy who says, and this is true to a man, and I'll leave their names out, even during interviews, so it's not a secret, that says – Belichick's different, kind of like Jordan, that you can't do both great for an extended period of time, meaning the GM and the head coach, and you just can't because you got to worry about pro personnel during the season and this guy and contracts and salary caps. And, oh, I got to draft this guy. Oh, is this guy playing? And remember, Bill was also the play caller. So that's a third one. Jack Del Rio told me, he came in to me and visited me. He's one of my better buds, and we played golf for a handful of days during the fall time. And, you know, after when Jack was – before he'd been hired by the Washington Redskins. And we sat and he was on the show. He said, Sean, listen, an offensive coordinator has about 4 to 6 hours of himself per day, or a defensive coordinator. He goes – or a position coach. He said a coordinator has about 2 to 4 hours if they're lucky a day. A head coach needs to buy more time. Now you add general manager to that. There's not enough time in the day to do them all great. So they got better on the draft. Their first two picks with Blacklock and Grenard were both good defensive needs, but they're young. And Bill O'Brien doesn't really believe in young players. He thinks this is a veteran season because, well, we haven't had an off season. So they should help, though, and they're going to need to help. But the defensive back end didn't get any better. And when you trade DeAndre Hopkins, you don't get better. You didn't get better. So the receivers who have been injury prone, they've got plenty to prove. On paper, it looks good. And then you running game, David Johnson, David Johnson's going to have to be the top three rusher in the league to validate this trade. He just is. And I don't know if he's a three down back on a continuous basis. I hope he is. He's a great guy. But no, the team got worse. The draft day was better for them. But when you consider all the overall trades and everything Bill gave up and Hopkins and the rest of it, the Texans are the third best team in the division as we sit here today. The Colts, Tennessee Colts, however you want to slice it, they're the first two. Deshaun Watson keeps you alive in all of it, and you got to be healthy. But no, they didn't get better. They got better on draft day. They didn't get better as a whole this offseason. You don't give up one of the top three or four best receivers in the league and all of a sudden decide, well, we got a backup running back in Arizona for him and a second-round pick. No, they are not a better team. Now, can they be? Maybe. Deshaun Watson's going to have to play out of his mind for them to go, and we know that. And if he doesn't, the Texans are going to be in a battle to try and make the playoffs, pure and simple.
What do you think Jonathan Joseph has in the tank at this point in his career?
Great leadership. A guy who can spot you, not a 65-snap-a-game guy, that we know that, but can move around and understand. Listen, as you mentioned before you teed up the question, the mental side of it. It matters. Now, you can be as mentally strong as you want, and if you have no zero game in you, then you're not going to make any team. There's enough game for him to specialize and very well respected in this town, in Houston, because of his ability to lead and to be a good example. And what happens is you get to a point that you recognize what your weaknesses is on the field as physically, because you can't, you're not quite as fast. Maybe your reaction time can't get out of a cut as much as you'd like to. But like the old veteran quarterbacks, you beat them to the punch. You anticipate better. Your pre-snap visuals are better. You understand formations, which means ramp up the study. The best thing Jonathan will bring is, other than understanding situations during a game, is Jonathan Joseph's ability to, during the week, teach you how to get ready to play. And don't underestimate that, because it does matter, because there are many times I've gone into a game on a Sunday and thought, I remember what Jim McMahon told me on Wednesday. Or I remember what, you know, this veteran said, and it sticks with you, or coach. So the ability to understand the mental side is important, especially if you got enough game. But you're not an every snap guy, but he is a good guy to have on your roster. And young guys will learn a lot from a guy like him. If they're listening, two ears and one mouth, use them accordingly when veterans talk.
Sean Salisbury is with us. Jadeveon Clowney continues to be a rumor and the possibility that he could sign here with the Titans. Is there a correlation in the fact that his career year in sacks at 9.5 is when Vrabel was the defensive coordinator there in Houston? Would that be the fit in your mind if Clowney comes here and is able to reunite with Vrabel?
I think it'd be a great fit because Mike liked him. Mike, you know, this talk, well, he didn't practice well. Mike says different. I trust guys who've played it, who coach it, who demand it, and who understand what to expect from a player every day. Listen, Clowney's not going to get as good as Clowney is, and boy, is he a great run disruptor, and is he a guy that you have to account for every snap to understand where he lines up. Now, remember, we pay guys in a league on sacks. We just do. He could be a specialist and get 16 sacks or be an every down guy and get 8 sacks. I'm talking about any pass rusher. You're going to pay the 16-sack guy more. Why? Because they're gaudy, and that's what they want. We want a disruptor in the back, but maybe the second most important or at least held in high regard position, the quarterback and the disruptor. That's how we start teams now. And Clowney's a disruptor now. I think he probably overpriced himself. Not probably, he did. And he thinks he should be making Khalil Mack money. And the reason why he's probably not, a little bit of injury thing, but he's going to be fine from that, is the fact that Khalil's got the defensive player of the year and gaudy stats. And Clowney has not had that. And regardless or not, but I wouldn't judge him on his sacks. He can sack the quarterback, but he is a major disruptor. He does make coordinators approach their game plan a little different in talking to people that have played against him. They just do. So Yeah, he'd be a great fit. Mike knows him. Mike knows his, not only his strengths, but his weaknesses and positions to keep him out of. I don't want Jadeveon Clowney in coverage. I want Jadeveon Clowney doing what he does, wearing people out at the line of scrimmage and making the quarterback think twice. That's what I want him to do. It'd be a hell of a fit. People in here in Houston sure as hell don't want it. They want him in Seattle or as far away from the division as they can get him. But, yeah, if there's anybody who understands what Mike does, and it's going to come down to there or Seattle, one of those teams probably, anybody who knows, Mike knows. Mike knows how to practice him, and Mike knows what to get from him. But I wouldn't judge people say, oh, he only had 9.5 sacks. There's a lot more to this game and towards creating havoc than sacks, pressures, a run game, disrupting, changing offensive game plans, all those come into play. And Clowney's obviously young enough and disruptive enough to get paid plenty of money, but also to make you rethink a game plan. He still does that to offenses.
Last one for me. We know that it's not just one player, but is he the last piece in your mind that puts the Titans in a really good spot to compete for the AFC South, whether it's with Indy, with Houston? I don't really count Jacksonville, but with one
right,
of those two teams, is he that last little piece they need?
Oh, he'd just be an extra embarrassment of riches. I mean, you guys are already well. I don't have to go any farther than last year to show you, as you guys well know, that this Titans team with a break here, a break there, and a few plays, they may have been the representative playing in February too. So, listen, when you got teams like that you haven't completely dismantled, that you've added to, you know, in your guys' draft, getting what I think it was Isaiah Wilson and Christian Fulton, if I'm not mistaken,
yep,
with the first two picks and need positions. And then you just add depth and you add a guy that you come in and you say, okay, this is a different game plan. We know what we got to do. Yeah, I think you can win the division without Clowney. So the question is, but the goal isn't to win the division. It isn't for Mike. I know it's not for you guys sitting in, you know, doing these radio shows and for the fans there. The goal isn't to finish in sixth place, because then we're back to the little league, everybody gets a trophy. If that's the goal, then that's the goal you'll get. Everybody gets a certificate. Hey, thanks for competing. You were one of 14 teams, or one of the last 13 teams that got in but didn't win it. And I know how Mike thinks, and I know that front office and the fans there are not thinking, let's just get in, and neither are you guys. So they can make the playoffs without Clowney and be a threat. The key is, and they've got some good young offensive weapons, and can Tannehill repeat what he did, you know, last year and even extend it where they push the ball a little more with those young weapons, and then you add Clowney to it? Yeah, of course. That just makes it even better. That's much to Phillip's, you know, Rivers' chagrin and Deshaun Watson and coordinators. So I think you can get there anyway, but you don't want to get there. And Clowney could be a piece that takes you to another level, because regardless of how people think about him, the guy can play. And he's well-liked in Seattle. He is. And he is a good football player. So don't let the sacks be misleading to a fan who says, oh, 9.5, he's not that good. There's guys who get more sacks than Clowney that can't hold his jock when it comes to playing football.
Sean, we spent a lot of time on Friday's show, or some time on Friday's show, breaking down Mike Vrabel's house at the draft on Thursday for the first round. Have you guys, how much did you spend breaking down who Bill O'Brien was yelling at when he was caught on camera?
Yeah, you know what's crazy? Oh, we did, but you have to understand something. We expected, if Bill O'Brien wouldn't have hollered at somebody during the draft, everybody here would have said, is Bill soft now? Because when it comes to press conferences and the rest of it, he's as abrasive as it gets. So it would have been more, what the hell was Bill doing being so kind and not being angry at somebody during the draft? So, yeah, you've broken down Vrabel's house. We've broken down Bill O'Brien. Ah, there it is. There's the Bill that addresses the media when he's pissed every week and tells us, hey, we'll do it after we – matter of fact, I'm sure after people made a comment, Bill said he's going to go back and study the tape before he makes a comment on what he said when he was yelling at the person during the draft. I think most of us, you guys probably included, were more concerned about Cliff Kingsbury and Sean McVay's houses, you know. Kingsbury
Ooh.
Kicking back with yeah. you know, relaxed shoes on with his feet up, like, dude,
life goals
out there. I want to know what's going on in that backyard or that pad you got going on. So, yeah, the things we'll dream up to. But I thought the NFL handled the draft pretty damn good considering these crazy circumstances we're in. But, yeah, we went through that as we do every single thing we can find to milk out of sports right now. But this shows why you guys are a good show and why I think we are. We still find plenty of sports to talk about that isn't just a list every day. So it's a good thing.
Yep. Hey, always appreciate the visit. Thanks for doing this. Continue to be safe. We'll talk to you down the road.
You guys are awesome. Thanks for having me on, man. Be careful. Talk to you.
All right, you too. That is Sean Salisbury. And he is, of course, the host of the Sean Salisbury Show and can be heard on Sports Talk 790 down in Houston. And we always appreciate the visits. We'll come back and finish up the hour with This Is What I Know. Tell us what you know next on 102.5 The Game.
Appreciate Sean Salisbury for joining us, Darren Donick and Chase, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It is This Is What I Know time, 615-737-1025. You must call in or text. You must participate and tell us what you know. It's what we do every Monday at 11:45 or thereabouts. A lot of good stuff from that interview with Sean Salisbury, but what do you know? Willie, Darren, which one of you want to start?
I'll start.
All right.
This is what I know. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I have all the answers of what our plan should be, and how much is the right amount, and when we can open up, and whether sports are going to be played, or whether fans are going to be in the stands on a certain date. But this is what I know. The picture that I saw from a well-known establishment in Williamson County from over the weekend, I know that that's not the right way to get where we want to go. If that picture is accurate, and again, I don't know whether it was or not, I saw a lot of people tweet the same picture from the same establishment. So I don't know 100% if that picture is from this weekend. But if it was, and I suspect that there were more than one place, there was more than one place that had this issue where there was absolutely no regard to the guidelines that have been set out, that's not the way we want to go. And that is going to set us back from achieving the goals that we all want to achieve. We all want to move forward. We want to get back to work. We want to have sports. We want to have all the things. But we're going to have to do it the way that we're supposed to do it. And that wasn't it. Not a single mask. Not a single person 6 foot away from the next person. None of it. I know that that's not the right way to do it. I don't know everything. I don't pretend to know everything. There's a lot of uncertainty about the plan and all that stuff. But I know that's not the way to do it.
Okay.
Well said.
I've got, this is what I know. President and CEO David Andrews. After a lengthy review process, the American Hockey League has determined that the resumption and completion of the 2019-2020 season is not feasible in light of current conditions. The league's operational focus has turned toward actively preparing for the 2020-21 season. So the AHL has decided to close the books on completion or resuming the rest of their season. Too bad for the Milwaukee Admirals, who had a memorable regular season. But that's what I know, unfortunately. I don't think this is any great surprise, but it was made official this morning, so I wanted to pass on along, and that's what I know. Sad news.
That's a good one. And did you guys see the report of the CFL that they're ending their season, and this could have impact on their future?
Dire situation.
Yeah, they're not.
It really made it sound like the actual future of the league is in jeopardy.
Yep.
The CFL is in jeopardy.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, they might need government assistance to stay alive.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
So that would be, we've already seen it take down the XFL, but if this takes down the CFL, that's something to see a league just completely go away. This is what I know. Very, very cool event held Saturday. I have been very much into the iRacing and watching that Fox Sports coverage. They've been going to tracks that NASCAR was supposed to be at week after week, but with the announcement the NASCAR will return, they decided to do something a little bit different, and they went to the old North Wilkesboro Speedway, which is a short track that they haven't run there since 1996. It's had weeds growing all over it, and Dale Earnhardt Jr. led a group of people from iRacing with some other drivers, and they went and they cleaned it up so iRacing could go in and scan it and be able to put it in the game. And so the drivers of NASCAR, the current drivers that were probably kids the last time that they raced at North Wilkesboro, had a fun event on Saturday, and Denny Hamlin won the race. Very, very cool, very accurate, and just kudos to them for being able to do this over the last several weeks with iRacing to keep people entertained before the sport comes back to the real cars, which it's going to do this Sunday. So that's what I know. I was very entertained.
So they are expected to get cranked up this weekend.
Yep. Sunday. It's happening at Darlington. They announced that there's a couple of tracks that they were supposed to go to this year, Chicagoland and Sonoma. They will not visit those tracks this year. Richmond is only going to have one race as opposed to its normal two. So they did have to make adjustments to the schedule because they're going to go to Charlotte basically three times, Darlington three times. Darlington usually has one race, but they're trying to make this work the best they can to get racing back, but they will do that Sunday at the Darlington Raceway.
All right. Very good. Let's go to Nate. Nate is on hold. Nate, what do you know?
This is what I know, fellas. It is ridiculous that the Polar Cave Ice Cream Parlor in Massachusetts has to close the day after it reopens from the pandemic because the parlor was losing employees from quitting since customers were being rude and yelling at them. So here's a PSA for the people of Nashville. Please be kind to the restaurant, retail, and whatever other employees you're interacting with. It's a hard time for everyone, and every one of the people working with the public need cooperation from the public to successfully pull off all protocols to keep people safe and also make them feel appreciated.
I did not see this, so I'm not sure. I cannot relate to what you're talking about. I haven't seen this story.
Yeah, I mean, I just saw it on my phone's news feed that I have, and yeah, it's sad. Like, and the owner of the ice cream parlor, you know, said 17-year-old kids don't deserve to be yelled at. So,
and what were people yelling at them? Did you read in length of the
story?
I don't know
the specifics, but they were just being rude and. I mean, I can kind of see that happening here in Nashville just because everybody's so jacked up to get back out and everybody's going at the same time to these different places and people are getting impatient and just start being ugly towards each other.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Guess they didn't learn anything the last 2 months, huh?
I guess not.
That's a shame. All right. Thank you, Nate, as always. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I did not see that. Wow. I don't know if that's because of the pandemic or not. Just some people are rude no matter what what we have going on. So I don't know. I'm not
don't
familiar
be a jerk.
With that story. Wow.
Like people today.
I thought, honestly, they were going to – I thought he was going down the road of they couldn't stay open because they couldn't get a lot of their employees back because they're like, yeah, I'm making more money collecting unemployment than what you're paying. So no, I mean that story's real. I mean that's out there. There's a lot of owners out there, especially in the service industry, that are saying I can't get a lot of my employees to come back. They're like, yeah, I'm making more money on unemployment. So let's see.
Yeah,
for
a period of time that might be the case for a number of people, which is not a bad thing to some degree, but that is going to be a tricky thing, is being able to sort of stair step our way back to getting those people back to work the way that I hopefully they want to be long term, right? Because they're not going to get that forever. But I have heard that too, guys. Just so you know, I've heard business owners say that is something they got to deal with.
Yeah,
no doubt about it.
Look, but still, just be considerate. Understand that this is not a normal time, and things aren't going to move at the pace that you're used to. You have to be patient, especially with these places opening at half capacity. They're going to be busy, and you just have to be patient, or just don't go. Just don't go. If you can't be patient, then don't go. Or wear a mask or all that, then you should probably just stay home. rant over.
I was just reading something. One of the dads on our baseball team went to Jackson State, and I just happened to see a tweet. In 1968, Jackson State, which is in Jackson, Mississippi, had 11 players drafted in the NFL.
Wow.
That year. How about that? In 1968.
Was Walter Payton one of them?
Well, I mean, that's obviously their most prominent alumnus. There's no doubt about that. That year,
That might have been pre-Walter Payton.
Yeah, I think that was pre. That year, Ole Miss and Mississippi State had 11 players drafted combined. That's a pretty cool little stat. Wow. All right, we'll come back. We'll head east. We'll bring in Vince Ferrara from the Sports Animal. The Vols just keep getting it done on the recruiting trail. What does that mean moving forward? We'll talk to him next. Hour number three, ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.